now. This is a story I got to share. It'll only take a minute, sit right there. If you shop at Iceland or Matalan, let me tell you about a special place called Cumbrán. Bill. In South Wales, home to straits and gays, with fantastic free parking, you can park any days. Go up the leisure centre, look at tits in the pool, get arrested hanging around one of secondary schools. There's a number of pubs, and they're all quite good, although the square's full of rough from the neighbourhood. So get on the motorway and drive as fast as you can, on the A4051 to Cumbrán.
Welcome to Tales for Wales, the pod that never fails to be the marching drum of the latest rebellion, the banner of hope that keeps you from the rope, the charismatic hero who will eventually be next week's zero. It's me, the commander in queef, Frankie, joined by Corporal Cage. How are you?
Commander in queef, that was very good. Caught me out of left field there. All the rebellion sort of terminology, and then went, I'm just going to say the word queef now.
I was trying to think like down an army route, and so I think commander in queef is always good gear.
Corporal Cadgy, yes, yeah. Tick.
And do people know why I called you Cadge? Have we mentioned that before?
We might have done right in the earlier episodes. Maybe some newer listeners might not understand.
Well, should we? So yeah, if you don't know, in school, Jack's best mate and boyfriend.
I don't want to go through it again because I remember, actually, I do remember us doing this on the pod before because this pit I'm feeling in my stomach now is a familiar one where I don't want to for people to know.
Well, Jack's best friend and boyfriend for a couple of years was because he's an absolute dweebling and his little nerder gang. So before I made Jack cool, his mates would all call themselves by their names backwards. Tim was Mitt.
Ellis with Sile. Tim was Tim Alex Jacobs. He was Mitt Zella. Because it's Mitt.
And you were Jack, Cadge. And then Cadgy. And then for some
and our
reason.
Our friend Sean, who was he was nice, right? Yeah, he seems nice. To have just like a snake shedding its skin, just left that behind in school times. And I'm still called Cadgy as a bitter reminder.
But I actually think Cadgy's quite good.
Until you know why it is though, isn't it? Like, that's a good nickname. Until you go, oh why? And then because I was an absolute fucking loser in school.
We should do one of those. To be fair, we got such a fucking hectic schedule. We can't just do a throwaway episode. Maybe on the Patreon we can do a fun episode where we do some old stories. Because we have got
bang Ramo out the classics.
Ramo Kablamo. Oh, we should also firstly say buy our shirts. Whilst we're recording this, they're currently not on sale, but when this goes live, they will have been live.
Yes, we're ahead of the game for, we're managing to keep ahead of it for a while. Yeah. So, yeah, it's not out now, but by the time this comes out, they would have been week. So yes. I expect them to be sold out, unless you guys hate us.
Yeah, if you hate us. If you don't support Welsh history, it sounds a bit English of you. Sounds a little bit Edward I, if you know what I mean.
Bit colonial, isn't it, if you don't buy our merchandise.
And what a great guest Sam was last week. He was class.
You guys would have heard it by now when this comes out.
You
better have anyway.
So catchy then.
I was trying to get speak before my burp came out, so I had to do it really quick. And it sounded really horrible. Like by now, for God's sake.
After this,
we had such a blast with Sam, didn't we? He was good.
You after this call, we'll catch up and we'll figure out how we get Patreons. If you're a Patreon member, we'll give you a specific link on Patreon to get money off them. And
give you like a little code and whatever.
Yeah, we'll give you a code. So another reason to join the Patreon, you get money off the merch.
We've done a grubby deal with with Chris IT.
Grease some palms behind the scenes.
Backhanders.
And what else could we say about that? Yeah. Well, I suppose it's hard to know how it's going because we haven't. It's not actually happened in real life. So, but we would really appreciate
it. Could absolutely tank, mate. You never know. And by this point in actual time, we're going right. Put it on the scrap heap. It's dead.
It's a great time in time of Christmas to buy someone who has never heard of our podcasts some merchandise around it, or you can send it to your partner. If you've got like your mum who's asking what do you want for Christmas, say, "Ma'am, give me this t-shirt. I fucking love it.
I want 10 Tales for Wales Chris IT t-shirts, please. You can 10 also do of the finest.
Patreon Christmas cat thingies. So Patreon will let you sign up for like a year. So if you're stuck for ideas, sign up to Patreon for a year and listen to us warble on. If you do,
of
that,
all
you
the
can...
things a normal person wants for Christmas, I'm sure a year's worth of Patreon for us is probably right at the top of the list.
I reckon we probably, no one should do that. It's insane.
If you want to, by all means.
But, I mean, I'm a Patreon member for a few things, and even I'd save money doing it for the whole year, but that does seem a little bit mad to be like, right.
I just thought, imagine if on Christmas my wife went up to me and went, I haven't got your present this year. I bought you a year's worth of Patreon. It could be for any pod. And I'd be like, fuck's sake.
Are you ill? Have you lost your mind?
I preferred last year when I had my tie rack, for fuck's sake.
Well, actually, I'm such a fiend for podcasts. Like, I think I'm up there with, like, I don't actually listen to music anymore. I'm always listening to about, like, I probably do like 6 podcasts a day, but not easily more than that. I probably do, I don't know, I'm always absorbing them from like 7:30 in the morning until Emma comes home. All day I've been listening to them. If I have a second to myself.
Rhythm and lyrics doesn't do it for you anymore, does it? It's all about intellectual conversation now. You've got to feed that brain of yours.
Yeah. And then I just realised that I don't really know who I am anymore because I just say things I've heard on The Rest Is Politics. Or...
I don't have a personality anymore. It's just regurgitating secondhand information. Yeah, that's life though, mate, isn't it? That's the world. Don't worry about that.
Do a Patreon shout out actually whilst we're on the Patreon subject.
Let's do that while we're here, isn't it? While we're recording.
Well, we might as well.
now we've both intentionally set up a meeting online. Yeah. So next shout out for us. So next up on our list of shout outs is Sean Hughes. Shawnee Little Years.
Shawnee Little Years.
Shawnee Little Years. And that might be a very niche. That might be a niche reference for some.
Well, I was going to go pretty niche.
What's the uptick?
I was going to go for Sean Hughes Blues Clues. And and that is pretty, a bit more. I mean, have you seen? It's a bit insufferable. That guy came on my TikTok the other day. You know the guy from Blues Clues?
Oh, he's like, the straight man to blues slapstick. Yeah.
He's like, sorry, I've not been with you for 20 years. And he's coming out, he's all like trying to comfort all millennials who are broken like us. Who are like, desperate. Well, actually, I'm not. Do you know, like, people are like a bit, I don't know. I'll get into this later. I'm just going to say, I don't mind the internet and I'm always fine on it. And like, I'm not, some people are like, oh, I'm on it too much. It's great. The internet is so much fun.
Don't be wrong. Sometimes I do think I hate that my algorithm just because I want to watch something for like maybe 2 seconds, right? That I don't usually watch. Listen, Instagram, I don't want to see constant repetition of that same video. So I watched this one bloody interview, another Wicked stuff that's going around at the moment. Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo, whatever her name is. I've watched one thing where they're like just being needlessly emotional. I don't know what the context of it is, but it's like it seems like someone goes like, oh, how was it on set? And they're like, oh my God. And like at one point Ariana Grande is like stroking her finger.
I've seen that. Mental. Yeah.
And I just think couldn't start. So I watched
news has been broken to her about something that I think in that video.
I don't know, but I was watching it and I kept, well, I only saw literally the response. So I don't know what the context of it, like the question was, but the stroking of the finger, I couldn't stop looking at it. And now my algorithm's like, you love Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo. Well, you love Wicked. So I've got so much of that popping up.
I've just sent you what's my take a screenshot of your For You page and send it to me. I've just sent you mine. I've kind of like cultivated my social media experience to just be burgers, pints, exercise, like guys who do exercise, which I'll never do, and then horror movie stuff. And so it's just like, there's nothing right wing or left wing or anything. I keep all of that so far away. And it's just like,
I know what you mean.
Yeah, if you like, don't involve in politics, engage in politics on there. Like, you can make Instagram a safe haven for it.
I'll send it to you now, right? So the first thing that comes up is like an anime thing. I got loads of food, and I've got 1, 2, 3 fucking Wicked based things there at the moment.
And one of them
is the girl from Smile 2, because like obviously I follow film stuff.
Yeah.
Christ, your thing is so many half naked men. What's going on?
So many fat men. And then
so many fat men, henchmen, some what looks like some AI horror monstrosities.
Yeah, really. A lot of people who I'm obsessed with following people who only do carnivore diets because they're fucking mental. And then this one guy, he'll make anything but like a salad. So he's like, oh, I'm watching, today I'm going to make a lasagna, and every layer of pasta is like ground up chicken. And then it's always so disgusting. And everyone always slams him. They always say his eyebrows fell off. And, he was like, look, I'm really healthy. He's not big at all. Like, for someone who's a professional, like a trainer and on this carnivore diet, he's not big at all. And he posted his results from where everyone's like, mate, you're going to be so thingy. And he's like, he said, look, these are all fine. And some doctor's like, oh, you're pre-diabetic. I'm obsessively like, oh, watch him all the time. But yeah, my algorithm is just
maybe the patrons, dogs. Maybe patrons can get these screenshots.
Yeah, we'll put them in. Let's put these on the
straight up.
Let's do this on the free tier for the Patreon. So if you want to go see what our For You page is, and let us know what yours is. I'd love to know what our followers ones are.
I'm surprised, you know. I mean, I'm not saying I'm like some sort of pervert online, but I definitely thought there'd be something like coming up that would my wife probably wouldn't want to see. Yeah.
Well, I looked at Emma's, and Emma's one is just loads of like half naked girls. And it's because she's like looks at like fitness things.
Double bloody standards, isn't it? Standards.
And I also get a lot of the those two guys who watch the Hawk Tour podcast and then review it like it's art.
Oh yeah,
that's good. Anyway, this is completely off. We're meant to be praising.
Well off topic.
Newsy boy.
Sorry. Yeah. Back to Shawnee boy. Shawnee Little Ears. And I was going to come on to it before we got sidetracked then. But yeah, the Shawnee Little Ears reference, for those who don't know, was that the Ross Kemp on Gangs?
Ross Kemp on Gangs.
Talking to all the gangs.
From the Milk. That's that Welsh group.
Yeah. The Milk. Yeah. That's it. That is like a staple. I think all of our friendship group would get that reference.
Yeah. It's like it's like probably 10 years into internet humor. So they just used to voice over clips on like EastEnders or Ross Kemp, and then they're all from like the Valleys accents, and they had little Shawnee
and they were just so stupid, didn't it? But that was a staple of ours growing up. That Shawnee Little Ears. Well, thank you, Sean Hughes, mate.
Thank you, Shawnee, mate.
Shawnee.
Yeah. Who's he?
You're a fucking legend. Who's he, legend?
We're a bit all over the shop today. It feels like I've not seen you in ages, but I've seen you loads recently.
So much. Yeah, too much.
Too much.
I was about to say, you know what I watched yesterday with Amy? Mm. I had a couple of beers at the in-laws when we had some Sunday lunch there. And I came back and Amy was in the mood for she'd been listening to this podcast about like dictators, like from World War II and stuff like that. So she was like, oh, I fancy something like a bit more documentary-esque than, you know, the usual film. So we put on that, They Shall Not Grow Old, the, Peter Jackson thing. It's about like, they took footage
from the war,
from World War I, from the Great War.
Yeah.
And, the very best of the wars. And I don't know what you'd say, like remastered it, I guess. So they made it colorized it.
Yeah,
which is
he loves
good.
A bit of that.
And then they sharpen it up and everything. Yeah. And it's done with your wetter workshop and all that. It's quite good. It was really good actually, the whole thing. But you do see if you notice, look at like the movements of people, it's a bit like, it looks what like AI is today. Yeah. You know, where it doesn't quite sit right. It
slides around a bit.
And all it is like audio clips from people from World War One, obviously long dead now, but when they got the audio clips from them describing it and like with accompanying footage, and I couldn't help but think it was much more, it was grim, but then there was lots of it, so I couldn't help but like giggling to myself, because I was like, so much of this applies to Banbury, where we just come back from, because of how traumatic that's been. So it was like, you know, they'd be going, none of us knew what we were signing up for. We just wanted a laugh. We just thought it was the right thing to do. But none of us came back the same. And I was like, that applies.
The listener, all of us who went up for a lives weekend to Banbury have been battered by it financially, emotionally.
Yeah.
We were all none of us 2 days on the sesh and watching the football. And we
big sessions.
I actually had a weekend off the booze completely. And right now, I'm having an alcohol-free beer. I'm having an
urge. You've come back a changed man.
I have. I've got some skinny lagers in a bit, but I'm going to have a couple of these alcohol-free beers and then a skinny lager later on. Like, I genuinely have had like a road to Damascus kind of like change of heart.
It's It really has. I feel like I told you, texted you the day, is that I feel like I've left a piece of my soul there or something. Yeah. Like the part of me that used to be able to feel joy. It's just I didn't come back with it. Because, but yeah, when I was watching this They Shall Not Grow Old, I was thinking of us, you know, and it was like going, none of us knew what we were signing up for. None of us. It were a damn shame what they did to us. Well, we never knew we'd end up in fever, not fever in Banbury.
She gives me fever. Should we crack on with today's episode whilst I can pour myself a new alcoholic-free beer? I gotta say, for anyone who is trying to not have too much beer, the Erdinger is all right, but it's a bit fruity, whereas the Heineken 0.0 tastes really good. It tastes like
it doesn't taste like some of the non-alcoholic ones. Not that I partake that often, but yeah,
they overcompensate, like shit, don't they? They're like, right, because we're not alcohol. Well, this, like the Erdinger one's a bit peachy, and if you know me, I don't like my fruity.
I love in the attempt to make non-alcoholic beers taste like they have alcohol in them. So we got to make the taste a bit shit. You know, we got to put like a little bit of edge to it.
But the Heineken's like just cold, delicious cold.
What's everything? Anything's better cold, isn't it? Yeah. I'm on as I said to you before we started, I'm on the Perlin Bacchus today. Slave to the brand.
I meant it just tastes cold, not like it is cold. It just tastes like cold.
It tastes like cold.
Yeah. Yours is such an Aldi knockoff, isn't it?
It's all right. It's my last one, and then I'm on the Bud Light.
And what's it called again? Then.
Perlin Bacchus. Premium Pilsner.
Yeah.
And it says premium, so it must be.
It's got to be good.
Although I will give it this, it doesn't do like the usual little thing where, you know, usually it's like bordering on copyright infringement because they make it look so similar to something else. This one just looks like, I mean, to look at it, you'd think, yeah, piss lager, of course. Yeah. But I can't say that it's like trying to nick a brand of any kind.
It's not called like Starling or like Farling.
Yeah, it's like sort of combining all the elements you see in a piss lager can, but like in its own way. So props to them for that. And it's cheap, dirt cheap.
Do you want to hit us up then with what today's episode is going to be about?
Yeah, so today I'm going to be talking about Mad Dog Ap Llywelyn. As many of you will know, Wales, we love a rebellion. Whether it's the original Celts revolting against the Romans, guerrilla strikes on Normans, or full-scale battles against the English, historically the Welsh can only take so much shit before they start a big old argy-bargy with whoever's in charge at the time. Mad Dog was the leader of one such rebellion.
Like you're saying Mad Dog? It just sounds
I did debate going Mad Dog, the Mad Dog Ap Llywelyn, but I didn't put it in because I was like, is that too... I was like, it just sounds like Mad Dog already, doesn't it? So I'm just doubling myself.
I know we're doing a lot of internet humour, but have you seen that video where he goes, he's a dog?
I love that thing.
Can we drop that video in here?
I'll just talk about the running backs. We got Aiden Dennis, dog. Dodie Devon, dog. Sir Hale, dog. He scored 5 touchdowns against Southside. RJ Hoag, dog. Sam Cale, I didn't even know he played running back, but he's a dog. Evan Linker, man. He's a linebacker in my eyes, but I guess he can run the ball. Dog.
So often, someone in our group will send that round to the WhatsApp group again. Where it goes like, you know, be like, what's Jack like? Oh, he's a dog. What about Frankie?
He's a dog.
He's a dog. Crakel, that's a dog. Sean, he's a dog. Josh, he's a dog.
We've got to drop that in here, okay? Before here.
Yeah. Anyway, so Mad Dog, where was it? Mad Dog was Mad Dog was the leader of one such rebellion, and that lasted about a year between 1294 and 1295. And he piqued my interest because, as usual, this guy is super interesting, and I'd never heard of him. So let me pass on the knowledge and take you back through some of Mad Dog's highlights now for this epi. So Mad Dog, he was a son of a guy called Llywelyn Ap Maredydd. He was a vassal lord of Meirionnydd in northwest Wales, and that was under the Kingdom of Gwynedd at the time. Mad Dog's dad and himself.
So don't explain what a vassal is.
Vassal is like say the King of Gwynedd at the time. You would be serving under him if you were a vassal lord of Gwynedd. Overall loyalty, if you like, is to the liege lord of Gwynedd, which would be the king of Gwynedd at the time.
And it's like a subordinate position, and you're like,
so you're like a lord in your own right. You have your own lands and fiefdoms and all that sort of stuff. But once if the king of Gwynedd calls upon you to, you know, call to arms or whatever like that, you got to answer, basically. Or at least that's what your oath would tell you to do. So, so Madog's dad and himself, by extension, they were actually direct descendants of Owain Gwynedd, who was another big-time ruler from the 1100s. He was a dog, a big dog. We did an episode on him as well. Well, actually, have a look at that. Madog was also distantly related to Llywelyn ap Gruffydd, a.k.a. Llywelyn the Last, or Llywelyn in Llyw Olaf. So with these two familial connections in mind, you'd think this father and son duo were from very good Welsh stock. But sadly, Papa Llywelyn, Madog's father, he actually fought against Llywelyn ap Gruffydd, Llywelyn the Last, in the Battle of Bryn Derwen. So, we've mentioned this before, but many a time on the pod, but Welsh rulers, they used to fight each other all the time. And the Battle of Bryn Derwen was a fight between Llywelyn the Last and his two brothers, Dafydd and Owain, in 1255 for the control of Gwynedd. So to be Gwynedd's liege lord, essentially. As we know, Llywelyn beat his brothers and became the sole ruler of Gwynedd. And because Madog's father had fought against Llywelyn, he had his lands confiscated and drove the Lord of Meirionnydd into exile. So Madog's dad, again, I know there's a lot of Llywelyns here, so you know, tell me if I'm getting confusing. So Madog's dad, also typically named Llywelyn, he's now in exile in England, just to be clear. I know having two Llywelyns at the same time confused me a bit anyway, so if I'm confusing you, just let me
know. Yeah, that's fine.
I'll think it out. So Llywelyn the exile, he took a pension for many years from the English crown, until he saw some sense, switched back to the side of the Welsh. He made up with Llywelyn ap Gruffydd in June 1262. And then just a year after their reconciliation, Llywelyn ap Maredydd, he died fighting for Wales in a skirmish against the English. So he was a bit of a flip-flopper.
Yeah.
Now, normally, this would have meant the lordship of Meirionnydd would have passed down to Madog. But although the two Llywelyns did kiss and make up, Llywelyn the Last didn't grant him his land and title back before he died, meaning that Madog missed out because his dad was a turncoat before he was even born. So Madog didn't inherit those lands in Meirionnydd from his dad when he died. Speaking of which, Madog was actually born on English soil while his father was in exile. And by 1277, he was known to have received many monetary gifts from King Edward I of England, a.k.a. Longshanks. He was not a dog, in my opinion. Madog actually used this money to sue Llywelyn, Llywelyn ap Gruffydd, Llywelyn the Last, in an attempt to have his father's lands and titles returned to his line. So he was getting funded by the English crown, and he was using that money to sue, or to attempt to sue Llywelyn the Last for like his father's lands back.
I swear I've said this to you before, but whenever someone says sue, I'm going to sue you. I always just think about someone called Sue, like an old lady called Sue. I'm going to sue you.
And Susan just, like, Boyle you. Yeah,
they're going to send over
I'm
a little
Susan
Boyle.
I'm going to Susan
Boyle. Wow, that wasn't very nice, was it?
Yeah. Listen, I want my lands back, actually.
You've been absolutely Sue grade out of it.
Yeah. I don't know why that's like knocked me a little bit left field. Why you think that there's a person named Sue that comes up? Right, all right. Send another Sue round.
Right,
they obviously haven't got a message.
Right, they've been sued.
Right, I've sent a Sue to them. We should hear back on the morrow. Now normally, I've already done this one.
You've been absolutely sued out of it.
I've been sued out. Right, the legal dispute went on for years until Llywelyn's death at the Battle of Awerin Bridge in 1282.
Sorry to like jump in one more time, man, but don't you find it a bit like I'm being a bit ignorant, but to think they had like legal battles back then, like
you think it would just be
a battle.
Give me this or I'll smash your head in with an axe or something
it's
like
a
that.
Bit
you
like
know?
In Hook, where he goes, right, you want a duel, and he brings out his checkbook. And
he goes, how much? Yeah, they all cock their guns to him, and their little flintlocks. Right,
so you want a duel, do you? And he goes to get like his holster. And he brings out a checkbook.
He does it like a fast draw as well, doesn't he? With his checkbook and pen, and they go. And like draw guns on, he goes, how much?
And then who does he shoot? Hook shoots him.
Well, he shoots the checkbook, and then a pirate behind him just falls down dead.
And didn't you see the pirate's actually played by a woman? Oh no, that's
Oh, that's a different one. That's when they do the boo box.
You can tell we're close plays the pirate. I'm in good spirits. We're fucking derailing this every left, right, and centre.
I know so much.
Sorry,
but I mean, there's always time for Hook. That's all I'll say. There's always time for Lucky Lucky. I got a hooky. We watched it not long ago, didn't we? When you guys came over for the weekend,
right? Let's focus. Good. Let's focus on
Sorry.
The story.
Write the ship. Write the pirate ship owned by Hook. Right, got you.
So, run home, Jack.
Run home, Jack. Run home. Right, anyway, come on. Let's get back on.
No.
Let me get five more paragraphs in, then we can go back to Hook if you really want. All okay, right. If the urge takes over. Yeah. So. Like I said, the legal dispute went on for years until Llywelyn's death at the Battle of Awenin Bridge in 1282. By 1283, Longshanks' conquest of Wales was complete after he killed Llywelyn's brother Dafydd. And Madog, until this point, he was more of a servant of England than anything else. He was given lands in Anglesey for his loyalty to Edward I. So this is what was interesting to me. He starts off as a bit of a... what you'd consider an antagonist, a bit of a bad guy, because he was very much on the English side. And he only got these lands in Anglesey because the king he was kind of supporting, you know, conquered Wales, essentially. But you fast forward then to 1294, 12 years after Llywelyn was put to the sword, and 13 after the last Welsh rebellion was officially put down. And the Welsh were once again under punitive measures from the English. Longshanks was once again starting up a scrap with the French and was bleeding the country dry with taxes to fund the war. Administrators in Wales were especially harsh, as they usually are, particularly when a new tax was decreed that the crown would be taking 1/15 of all movable goods or the value thereof. So anything you could transport, and that included anything from gold, steel, grain, whatever, the English crown would take 1/15 of it and use that to fund the war machine. They'd even take brooches, jewellery, trinkets off the poor, like in the street. They'd like nab whatever you had on you. One thing that was off limits was children's toys, apparently. Aww. So Longshanks, even though he's a ruthless bastard, he wouldn't steal your kid's doll. So fair enough, I guess, for that. Not sure 100% why Madog had such a change of heart when this was happening. I don't know if maybe he realised how cruel the English were. Now he was living in Wales and ruling over people in Wales as well. You know, these punitive measures would have fucked off the local populace, and they'd be, as a lord in Anglesey, he'd be hearing the brunt of those complaints.
Yeah.
So maybe that was what changed, I don't know. But in any case, in 1294, he'd had enough of this. He set a plan in motion that took months to set up, but on the 29th of September, he sprung multiple attacks across Wales on English-owned garrisons and castles. Madog led his men in the north and assigned other Welsh rulers to attack strongholds elsewhere. Cynan ap Maredydd led attacks in mid-Wales, Maelgwn ap Rhys attacked in Ceredigion, and Morgan ap Maredydd attacked key points in
Glamorgan. So did he orchestrate all of them together?
Yeah, he orchestrated all this in cloak and dagger style, like over several months, got loads of... Because obviously all over Wales people weren't happy with the English. Yeah. So he said, right, we'll just... On this day, we're going to all make our move. So all up and down Wales, the English would be in attack without warning, on the 29th of September. While initially this was very effective, Madog and his generals had chosen September under the notion that Longshanks' armies would have already set off for France. But due to consistent bad weather, King Edward's armies were very much still in country. They were still stationed in England. So Edward delayed the attack on France and just sent his full army into Wales to quell this rebellion. Carnarvon Castle was one of the first taken by Madog's forces, with others all over the country being taken or sieged. All in all, Madog's Welsh-wide forces took the castles of Carnarvon, Castell y Bere, Hawarden Castle, Ruthin Castle, Denbigh, Morlais, and Kenfig, and they besieged the castles of Cricketh, Harlech, and Belth. The shortest siege in the entire campaign was 6 weeks, and the longest was 3 months. So... that's a hell of a taking, just to spring into action. They took a hell of a lot of castles, a hell of a lot of land.
That would have seven castles going to England as well.
Absolutely, yeah, a real thorn in the side. So seven castles taken, two of those, Kenfig and Castell y Bere, they were sacked and like just burned to the ground, essentially. Three were besieged. They also burnt down half of Caerphilly during the madness, like the town of Caerphilly now, not just the castle.
Caerphilly's had a fucking battering.
It's taken such a shoe in over the years. Yeah. There's a reason that it's the, was it second largest castle in
Europe? It is the largest, man. I don't count Windsor as a castle. It's fucking shit. It's like a palace. Cause the largest
is that the one
Britain.
That beats it? Is it? Yeah. Is that the one that's meant to be? Oh, fuck that then. Yeah, no, it's the largest. But, yeah, there's a reason that was built there. It's because it's come under such attack over the years. They needed like a massive stronghold there. But yeah, so they, where was I? Yeah, a lot of gains for Mad Dog and the boys in a relatively small amount of time. So once they sprung the trap, it was only like a matter of months before they'd gained so many castles and like, yeah, like you said, a real, what's it, a stick in their spokes of the English sort of economy. By November, the local English commanders made some attempts to push back the Welsh. In northeast Wales, Reginald de Grey, and I know we've mentioned de Grey's many a time on this because they're fucking bastards. It's the who's the other one? It's the de Greys and the Montfords or the Gilberts. Yeah, they're always against the. Like I said, we need to do an episode on these.
Yeah, we will do that. On these we've villains, got so many episodes. It's like we'll never run out. And no. That'll be a good avenue to go down because I love this period in history. So it'd be good to be able to go back and.
Yeah, we should go through like this the certain generations of like the Greys and de Montforts and all that that just are constantly being pains in the ass for Wales. Anyway, so yeah, as I said, northeast Wales, Reginald de Grey managed to hold on to castles in Flint and Rhythlan, thanks to him having large garrisons consistently stationed in both areas. Henry de Lacy, the Lord of Denbigh at the time, didn't fare as well. After he led a march to retake Denbigh Castle, Welsh forces ambushed him en route. Either killing the English or sending them running for the hills, basically destroyed the garrison that he was with. Come December, Longshanks led his army into Wales to quell the revolt, stopping at Wrexham, Denbigh, Abergele, among other towns on his way to Conwy Castle, dispersing Welsh forces on their approach. For the English defenders of Harlech Castle, this was a godsend. To give context, their defending force had been whittled down to just 37 men over a month's of siege from the Welsh. But with the large English army incoming, the Welsh abandoned the siege and Edward pressed on to Conwy. Apparently, Edward was feeling pretty up himself at this point, seeing the Welsh scatter before he arrived.
And he built Conwy Castle himself. That is one of his big buildings he built.
Yeah, so Edward was feeling pretty up himself because he's seen like the Welsh army led by the new rebel leader, Mad Dog, disperse before he even gets there. But Mad Dog was actually sitting pretty, knowing full well the English had taken the bait. So the North Walian force had actually regrouped during Edward's march and ambushed the king and his army before he could reach Conwy Castle. The Welsh forced Longshanks to retreat to the castle, after which Mad Dog's men captured his army's baggage train and made short work of any supply lines Longshanks had sent up. Conwy town was burnt down and Mad Dog led a siege on the castle for weeks until Longshanks' navy turned up to bail him out, forcing
the Welsh
to retreat.
Was he in the castle then whilst he was being sieged?
Yeah, so he was forced to flee. He got ambushed, his army. Yeah. He was forced to flee to Conwy Castle. Mad Dog cut all the supply lines and stuff like that, so it was looking pretty shit for Edward. But unfortunately, his navy turned up and forced the Welsh to retreat. And you know how we talk about a lot like the what-ifs of history?
Yeah, I'm just thinking that
I thought
now.
That's... such a biggie. Like, imagine those ships didn't turn up, or maybe they were like a week later or something like that. You know, how different history could have gone.
But
yeah, this is what I was thinking. I've never heard of this guy, and he had like Edward I on the ropes at one point.
Yeah, besieged. But that's the thing, though. His navy was one of the main reasons they conquered Wales, because they could cut off so much
just
of our stuff.
Too good. Just too good. And we didn't have a navy to speak of, essentially.
No, not
in the water. Sadly, like I said, Maddo and his men were pushed back thanks to reinforcements arriving by ship. And for those who don't know, Conwy is a town right on a river, so they could just drop English soldiers right where they were needed, essentially. So after their retreat, Mad Dog and his men were general pains in the arse for the English well into the new year. Around March 1295, Mad Dog had set his eyes on Shrewsbury and marched his men to take the town. But an army of Englishmen surprised Mad Dog en route, leading to a very bloody scrap known as the Battle of Maes Moedog. The Welsh held their own against the English cavalry for a time, employing the same Schiltern formations the Scottish would use against the English in the Scottish Wars of Independence.
But, well, that's a lie. It started as a Welsh formation originally.
That's the thing. I was just about to say, so although it looks like we copied the Scots, Scots actually copied Welsh originally, which we talk about in the
Battle of Stirling.
Stirling Bridge, was it? Or Falkirk.
Falkirk, I think we mentioned it there. Yeah, we
mentioned it. But yeah, Siltrons were originally a Welsh thing. And but a useful tactic against heavy horse, definitely. Anyway, so as I said, I tried to find out actually as part of this, of my notes here, who was the first, just for confirmation.
Yeah, just because naturally, probably it might not have been the first. It's not like we're copying the Scottish, and maybe they didn't. Yeah. Maybe that was just a medieval tactic.
I think by this point we'd both used it at least once, so it wasn't like copying the English. But as always, we lean biased into the Welsh. But I tried to find officially, like, to back us up, who used this Siltrun formation first, and it looks like the Welsh used the Siltrun formation at the Battle of Orewyn Bridge.
Yeah, they did that.
As well as this one with Madog. But the Scots first used it, as far as I could tell, in 1298 at the Battle of Bannockburn. I didn't do a deep dive into this, mind, so it could be bollocks, but the Welsh take it, I reckon, if true.
So Bannockburn, they did it there. I think they did it at the Stirling Bridge as well. But at Falkirk when they did it. Well, actually, we won't do a spoiler. Go listen to that episode and you'll find out why it didn't go so well.
So anyway, as I said, Wales was holding okay against the English cavalry with his Siltrun formation, but Longshanks has started incorporating longbowmen into his armies since the conquest of Wales back in 1282 or 83. The English had had a good 12 years to get decent at using longbows.
Yeah.
Also, there were some, unfortunately, even though Wales was in active rebellion, there were still Welsh troops conscripted in the English army. This combined with the fact that there was many a rebelling Welshman that were offered pardons on Edward's march through Wales if they joined his ranks. That meant a mix of English and Welsh longbowmen who were basically the Welsh were pros at that. So they were up against like some heavy resistance with these longbowmen. Taking heavy losses, Madog's men were forced to break rank and flee, many of whom drowned trying to cross the swollen river, estimated around 700 dead Welshmen. Oof. By the time the dust had settled, with Madog barely escaping with his life. A week later, Longshanks sent a hit squad of archers and knights to Madog's supposed camp, where much of his forces had apparently regrouped. They came across the camp at night, with the majority of the Welsh sleeping, and proceeded to slaughter Madog's men. Some sources estimate about 500 extra Welshmen were killed at that raid. So Madog went from some big wins to some pretty fun massive losses. Mm. Despite the bodies piling up, Madog once again managed to get away before he was poked with a sword or an arrow, and he lived on the run as a fugitive for about 4 months before being captured by a guy named Anirvachan and was handed over to the English. The Welsh resistance he'd started fizzled out, with Edward clamping down once again in Wales, and Madog lived the rest of his days in the Tower of London as a prisoner. There's no record of his actual death, but he was still alive in 1312, according to some records. So even if he died right after that record was made, he was in prison for a good 17 years minimum. During the rebellion, Madog had also signed a document as the Prince of Wales, or Tywysog Cymru in Welsh. So technically, he is among a list of native Welsh princes, even though it was only on one document he signed it as that.
Yeah.
Edward Longshanks came down like a fucking ton of bricks on the Welsh once more after this rebellion, with a string of punitive measures across Wales, further restricting civil rights and limiting the economic and social opportunities of its people. He also began construction of Beaumaris Castle around this time to tighten up security around Anglesey, where he believed this rebellion was rooted. The hardships brought upon the Welsh would actually come back to bite Longshanks' son, Edward II, in the arse only a few years later, when Llywelyn Bren started up another rebellion in 1316, even going so far as changing the line of English kings. We did an episode on that one, as well, and it's well worth checking out because that's a very, very good one about like how the knock-on effect of rebellion can affect things. So that's Madog ap Llywelyn, the prince from across the border.
Nice. Oh, I like that. Is that what he's known as, or did you add that caveat?
That's just my own little artistic flair.
I really like that, man. That's a good little artistic.
Interesting, isn't it? I like that he's he was born in England, and like he sort of starts out as a bit of a knob, to be honest. Yeah. You know, like suing Llywelyn ap Gruffydd for like his land.
But again, we only look at Llywelyn as a good person because he's like a hero. If he stole your dad's land and you probably wouldn't. You'd think he was the knob rather than. You being the knob.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Dirk and Grander, everyone, thanks for listening. Drop us a review, buy our shit, sign up to merchandise, sign up to
just
Patreon.
Buy the just bloody buy t-shirts, will you, for God's sake?
All right, Dirk and Grander, guys.
Cheers all. Ta-da, 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 ta-da.